Hi.
How do I say? Yeah, that's better.
That better?
Yeah.
Good.
So,
Peter Marks.
In answer to your question about my Instagram post yesterday, there's been this kind of campaign. It looks like an organized campaign, or maybe it's just a natural kind of deflation that's being caused by looking at the reality. But all of the big panegyrics of vaccinology, Bill Gates, Anthony Fauci, Peter Marks from CBER, which is the Center for Biological Evaluation and Research, that's the vaccine section or division of FDA, Paul Offit, and others are all kind of in this organized posture of dampening expectations about the vaccine, expectations that they've been working month after month for the last, since this whole thing began, to inflate. And now they're, you know, now they're bringing it down. And originally, as you remember, Bill Gates promised us what he called miraculous vaccine that would, with one shot, provide lifetime immunity for 7 billion people. And now they're saying, well, maybe it's not going to work that way. Maybe, and Paul Offit said, maybe it will prevent symptoms in an individual who gets the vaccines, but that individual will still be able to transmit the virus. Bill Gates said the same thing, and I think they're saying that because the leading applicant, which is the AstraZeneca vaccine, which used to be called the Oxford vaccine, when it was given to monkeys, monkeys appeared to get, and this is not necessarily true, but according to the researchers, they appeared to get a slightly milder version of COVID. They were still able to transmit COVID. What that would mean is that we would all become the vaccine, instead of protecting society, would turn us all into asymptomatic carriers. And Bill Gates and Paul Offit seem okay with that, that would be a satisfactory outcome for them. As long as we have a vaccine, it doesn't matter whether it's going to provide you. There's no herd immunity, of course, because we're all carriers. We're all spreading it. And it seems crazy. The other things they're saying about it now is that if the immunity, Tony Fauci said, may only last for 2 or 3 months. And then we'll have to get it again. So it'll be like the flu vaccine, which you get year after year after year. And what Peter Mark said yesterday, which I wrote the Instagram about, is that when they do, CBER's in charge of recommending the vaccine to a committee called VRBPAC within FDA that then licenses it. And what CBER is now saying, according to Peter Marks, is that they will now accept a vaccine if it has only 30 to 50% efficacy. And he acknowledged that for a vaccine to provide herd immunity, you need at least 70% efficacy, and at very least 70% of the people to take the vaccine, which does not look like it's going to happen. About half the people are now saying, I don't know. More than half, 51% are saying, we don't know whether we're going to take it or not. 27% say, hard no. We're not, no matter what they do, we're not going to take the vaccine. And so he's acknowledging that he's going to prove a vaccine that will not eradicate the disease and will not prevent transmission of the disease. That the disease will continue to circulate. It's just that certain people will get vaccinated. And it seems like when he was asked, this was on an FDA teleconference with kind of invited press, other tame journalists. And when he was asked by one of these pet journalists, well, how did you choose that number of 30, 50%? He said, well, we don't really have any reason that we can give you. And he said, it's just that if we went lower than that, it would be like, well, what's the point? So you can read my Instagram, anybody who wants to, you know, see what his exact quote was. But it was kind of crazy to have public health officials saying, well, we have no methodology here. We're recommending a vaccine that we know is not going to create herd immunity. And the other thing he said is, we knew that if we had to wait for a vaccine that would provide herd immunity, one that would get 80%, 70 to 80%, that the disease may disappear before we get there. So we wanted to lower the threshold to make it easier for the vaccine companies to get into the space and get their vaccine marketed and sold before the disease disappeared. So I'll leave that with you to process in your brain the irony and the kind of insanity of where our public health officials have ended up. But here's what I, you know, just while I explaining all this, something is occurring to me that I've been thinking about a lot lately, and maybe you can help me with by talking me through on this. The question is, you know, they say that they're going to do something with this vaccine that has never been done. They're acting like this is what they do with every vaccine. They test it against a placebo group. And Offit, if you look at the tape that I put on my Instagram of Offit, he's saying, I think I put the long version of it on, where he says, here's what we do with vaccines. We give them to 20,000 people, and we give them to 10,000. We give double-blind placebo. So 10,000 people get the placebo, 10,000 people get the vaccine. And then we wait a number of years, and we see what happens. Of course, that's never happened. They do that with efficacy testing, but they've never done safety testing that way. He says he's going to do it, this vaccine, they're going to do it differently. They're going to do real safety testing. So tell me, you know, how is this going to work? Because they have to go out, let's assume they're going to have 20,000 people, and 10,000 of those people are going to be given a placebo. So first of all, you have to find 20,000 volunteers who are willing to take the vaccine, which I think they'll be able to do. But you then have to test them first to make sure they don't already have the antibodies, because you don't want to test it on people who already have the antibodies, because that's not the people who are going to be getting this vaccine. Oh, you're testing it on people. You find those 20,000 people, you test them, and most of them are not going to have antibodies, but you're going to get rid of maybe 20 or 30% of them that have antibodies. And then what? You're going to divide them. You're going to give half of them a vaccine. And it's going to be a double-blind placebo test, which means neither the researcher nor the subject will know who got the vaccine and who got the placebo. And so half of these people are going to get the vaccine. And that means, let's say, 10,000. And then what happens? You can't then test them 6 months later and say, we're going to see who has antibodies. Because, of course, all the people who get the vaccine are going to have the antibodies. And we also don't know whether the antibodies are going to last. And so, because what they're saying now is the antibodies, even when you get the disease, the antibodies are gone within 3 months. So if you get the vaccine, the antibodies are likely to last even shorter period of time. So what are they going to try to find out from this test? They're not going to do an antibody measurement. That's not going to really tell you anything, because presumably they're not going to have the antibodies because they're gone after that period of time, after a 6 month period. They're going to have to test how many people died. And that's a very important information. If you gave it to 10,000 people and nobody died from that group, and you gave it to 10,000 other people at the same time and nobody died from that group, or people died from that group, that tells you something. The problem is that by the time they test these vaccines, the coronavirus is going to be gone. you know, we're in the second wave now, but everybody says this second wave is going to be gone within 24 days. Oh, how are they going to make sure that all 20,000 people are exposed to the virus? And then what happens? Because there's a death rate of 2.6, 0.26. Let's say that's the death rate. That means that we know that 80% of people are not even susceptible to the disease. Of those 10,000, only 2,000 at best are going to actually get the disease. About 80% of those won't know they get the disease. But if you look at, if you take 2,000 people and take 0.26% death rate, that's only 5 people who are going to die from the unvaccinated group. And so it's going to be very, very tough math for them to tell us anything realistic about the efficacy of the vaccine. The one thing you will be able to tell is something about the safety. And because you'll be able to look at those people and say, did they get Guillain-Barré syndrome? Is there a greater percentage of seizures in the people who got the vaccine than the people who did not get the vaccine? And so on and so on. If they actually do that kind of testing and that kind of reporting, which, as I say, has never been done before in history.
I think what most of the peeps that I speak to are concerned about has nothing to do with the virus or the vaccine, what happens with when you're vaccinated with this virus, other than the side effects that we've seen, the death, the paralysis, all those side effects that we've seen as we've traveled around this country from all the vaccines that are out there. Those are the things that parents are not prepared to put their children for. Nothing to do with the virus. They don't want the inevitable toxic stuff that's going to be put in that vaccine, the aborted fetal tissues, the aluminium. So the main concern is here, you know, we know one seizure can brain damage our children for life. So there's no way that they can test. Even the tested vaccines for years, so-called, they've been tested, are killing our children, maiming our children. So there is no way, whatever they say, that these vaccines will be tested safely at all. They have never been before, and they will not be with this one.
Yeah, and I saw that on GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, is making 1 billion doses of the adjuvant that it used in the pandemic vaccine, which was the one, you know, WHO in 2009 fabricated a phony pandemic in order to, and people should know about this. What happened is GlaxoSmithKline signed sleeper with WHO pressure. A number of African nations and European nations signed what they call sleeper contracts. And what that means is that the nation agreed to buy a certain number of doses of Glaxo's pandemic vaccine, which had never been tested, as long as the WHO declared a flu pandemic, swine flu pandemic. And the nations felt safe signing those contracts because there was a specific definition of pandemic that WHO had used for a generation, and that required epidemic outbreaks in many countries around the world with massive amounts of deaths. And that was part of the definition. You had to have massive amounts of deaths. So in 2009, a couple people got a version of swine flu, only a couple hundred people, I think 144 people. And WHO declared a pandemic, but there was no pandemic, and the pandemic never arrived. But what they did was they changed the definition of pandemic so that it just said epidemics around the world, but it didn't require any deaths. Now you can have a pandemic with no deaths, with zero deaths. And they declared the pandemic and it triggered those sleeper contracts. Those nations had to spend billions and billions and billions of dollars buying a worthless vaccine for a pandemic that did not exist. This is in 2009. That pandemic vaccine contained a very dangerous adjuvant. My memory is that it was a squalene adjuvant. And all around the world, in the nations that use that GlaxoSmithKline pandemic vaccine, there suddenly had epidemics of narcolepsy. And it was traced through the adjuvant. And the vaccine was pulled. Nations paid for the vaccines, but most of them, after the narcolepsy epidemic began, most of them did not give the vaccine to their children, to any more children. Still, you had thousands of children who got this disease, debilitating disease. And we thought, at least, well, that's the last we're ever going to see of that terrible adjuvant. But GSK just announced that it has made a billion doses of that adjuvant that is now selling to the companies who are creating these new vaccines for this pandemic. Oh, we're going to get, you know, and everybody knows it causes narcolepsy. Oh, you know, the idea that they're doing that again just shows that that they're not taking safety, vaccine safety, seriously.
And your Instagram post, I mean, people watching now, you haven't seen it, go back and look at it yesterday. There's a couple of videos that he's put up. These, you know, Fauci, they look ridiculous now, because you've got to remember, there are millions of us parents worldwide now that did vaccinate and now have either dead or injured children beyond belief. Excuse us if we don't trust what the CDC or these so-called experts say because of what happened to our children. But when you know what you know, like we do, because we've lived it first, there's no education in the world that can take away from what we have, which is firsthand experience of what happened to our children. And these people look ridiculous, you know, Fauci backtracking the whole time. All of these top so-called experts are backtracking. They're contradicting themselves. And anyone with a small ounce of brain can see that there is something extremely evil and fishy going on here.
Yeah, and, you know, people are asking on the Instagram feed that I'm kind of looking at, what is an adjuvant? And you know this, Polly, that what happened is very early on in the field of vaccinology, people began recognizing that live virus vaccines, which were the original kind of vaccines, would actually spread the disease. So that every passage, for example, the polio vaccine, oral polio vaccine, you eat it, it goes through your body. Every time it passes through your body, polio is growing in your stomach. And there are mutations that occur that can restore the polio a virus to extreme virulency, to deadly virulency. So that's why the WHO says that 70% of the polio today on Earth is vaccine polio. That is the polio that's gone through somebody's body, and then it gets into the local waterway, and it contaminates the whole community, and it starts an epidemic of polio in the community. We see epidemics today in the Congo, in Nigeria, in the Philippines, in Afghanistan, and in India, that are coming from Bill Gates' polio vaccine. If you look at the chickenpox vaccine manufacturer's insert, it says if you get this vaccine, which is a live virus vaccine, do not go near pregnant women for 6 weeks or people who are immunocompromised, because you can actually spread that, spread chickenpox to those people, and vaccine strain chickenpox. Flu vaccines are known to spread flu at 6 times the rate that you would get from an unvaccinated person with the flu. And then the pertussis vaccine turns people into asymptomatic carriers, so that you are spreading pertussis everywhere you go. The regulators very, very early on expressed a preference for dead virus vaccines. A dead virus vaccine is a vaccine where they take the virus that's been attenuated, it's been killed with chemicals, or it's been chopped up into pieces, and you inject a piece of the virus And it's supposed to stimulate your immune system so that it recognizes that virus and produces antibodies the next time it sees the real thing. The problem with dead virus vaccines is they don't provide immunity that is very robust or durable. And it was neither robust nor durable enough to get a license. And very early on, vaccinologists learned that if they put something horrendously toxic into that vaccine with the dead virus in it, that the body's immune system would be shocked by that toxic material and say, holy cow, whatever this is really dangerous, and I'm going to remember it, and I'm going to produce a huge allergic reaction to that viral particle, the antigen particle, the next time I see it. And they realized that they could use dead virus vaccines as long as they put a really horrendously toxic adjuvant into the vaccine. An adjuvant means something that adds to the immune response or boosts the immune response. Vaccinologists began a search around the world for the most toxic substances known to man. And they found them, particularly mercury, which for many years they said we're putting it in the vaccine as a preservative, but it was not in there as a preservative. It was in there as an adjuvant. The problem was, and actually Peter Marks and some other, and Tony Fauci, some other public officials told this to me and Mark Hyman and Lynn Redwood when we had a meeting with them in 2015. We said to them, you know, why can't you take the mercury out of the vaccines? The preservative, you don't need a preservative. You can use single pod doses. And they said to us, well, actually, it's not in the vaccine as a preservative. It's there as an adjuvant. We knew, Lynn whispered to me at that meeting, that's illegal. And that's what happened. It's illegal to use an adjuvant that is dangerous. You have to prove that it is not dangerous. And they couldn't do that with mercury. So they said, we'll put it in there as an adjuvant, but we'll call it a preservative because there's no rule that you can't use a toxic preservative. That's what they were doing all that time. And they went around the world and they found the most toxic elements known to man. Mercury is the most toxic element that we know of in the universe that is not radioactive. It is 1,000 times more neurotoxic than lead. Would you ever allow anybody to shoot your child up with lead? No, of course not. Well, aluminum is, or mercury is 1,000 times worse. And we gave that to every child in America for 25 years. And we're living with the consequence right now, which is the vaccine generation that began in 1989. We took it out of vaccines in 2003, out of the pediatric vaccines, but only in the United States and Europe. They continued to give it to Black children, 161 million Black children in Africa. And the WHO, and we were told this by Bill Thompson, we said, why in 2003, when you took it out of the pediatric vaccine, that DTaP vaccine, the HIP vaccine, and the hepatitis B, took it out of those vaccines, and they put aluminum in those vaccines instead. But the same year, 2003, they put mercury in the flu vaccine and they mandated flu to every child, every year of life, beginning at 6 months, and to pregnant women. So the children in America never got a break from mercury. And we said to Bill Thompson, why in the world did they do that? They were this close. They were going to take it out of the vaccines. Why did they put it back in the flu vaccine when they took it out of the other three? And he said that the WHO went to CDC and said, you can't take it out of it, all the vaccines, because the Black people in Africa are going to complain. The Black people, the Black countries, and the ministers of those nations are saying, why are you only giving mercury to Africans? You're taking it out of all the vaccines given to white people. Why are you doing that and only giving this very toxic brain poison to our Black children? And so WHO, And of course, the reason they're doing that is because it's cheaper. It's a couple pennies cheaper per vial. That meant a lot to the vaccine companies. They didn't care if they're poisoning all these kids in Africa. Oh, the vaccine. So the WHO went to CDC and said, you can't take it out of all your vaccines because it's going to make us look bad in Africa. We won't be able to sell this to these black countries anymore. Oh, as a favor to WHO, CDC added it back into one vaccine, which was the flu vaccine, which they continue to give our pregnant women and children that vaccine. And that is, of course, that is what Bill Thompson, who is a senior scientist at CDC's vaccine division for almost 19 years, and now is still continues to be an employee of CDC, and that's what he told us, because everybody wondered, why did they put it in the flu vaccine? The year they took it out of the three pediatric vaccines, why did they put it in the flu vaccine? And that's why. And as you know, Polly, there's a lot of kids that were injured by that, by mercury. It's, there are no studies that show that mercury can be given to children safely.
I don't know if you've got time to talk about this, but there's some comments coming in about Gavi. Can you explain what that is and what's the purpose of it?
Well, Gavi is an organization, it's the Vaccine Alliance. It is basically the spearhead of Bill Gates' empire. Bill Gates created it. Its board and funders include all the major vaccine companies, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, and then the WHO, and Tony Fauci is also in there. But it's kind of the spear tip of evil when it comes to the vaccine empire. And Gavi is the place where ID 2020 originated, which is Bill Gates' concept of giving everybody on the earth a vaccine passport and ultimately shipping people with a chip that would tell your medical records. But also now it's clear, because they now made this week MasterCard and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation announced, and WHO and Gavi announced, that they are issuing a card now for all Africans that will have be a MasterCard that they can use to buy things, but it will also have their vaccine records, medical records embedded in it. And ultimately, it's very clear that what they want to do is make sure that you cannot spend money unless you're up to date on your vaccines. And that's all Gavi. So, one of the things that happened this week is that Donald Trump announced that he was withdrawing U.S. aid from the WHO, which is about $400 million a year. But what they didn't say is that the White House and I believe this was Fauci's idea, although I don't know, in January began funneling $1.6 billion. So four times what we took out of WHO, we're now giving to Gavi. And that's like just giving money directly to Bill Gates and to the four vaccine companies. So it's a big disappointment that the White House is doing that, is involved in that. And I'm hoping that the Trump administration will rethink that commitment.
Can you just go back to the MasterCard thing? I don't know if I heard that right. Did you say Africans with the MasterCard?
Yeah, they're doing it now. They've already, I forget the name of it. And
that's outrageous.
You could look it up on my telephone if we weren't using the phone for this. But anyway, it's a chip or a credit card system where all of your vaccine records, MasterCard is partnering with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation to create a credit card, which will include all your vaccination records and be, your mechanism for purchasing stuff. What they really want to do, Polly, is they want to get rid of the cash economy. And they want to, and Bill, this isn't a conspiracy theory, this is what Bill Gates says. He says, we need to get rid of cash. because it makes it much easier to manage populations if you have digital currencies. And that will be the ultimate end of our freedoms, because if they, and of course the banks want digital currencies because they can make friction, you know, collect friction costs on every transaction. Nowadays, a lot of transactions around the globe are cash transactions, and there's no way to tax them. So you go to buy a piece of gum in the store, or a pack of cigarettes for a year, and you pay cash. And they can't, you know, they can't, the banks and even the governments have a hard time extracting money from that transaction. And if they have a digital currency, you literally will not be able to make any transaction without paying a tax and a fee on it to the bankers. And then it will give them the power to totally control your life, because if you disobey orders, I gave this example recently of the surfers who went to the beach in Malibu, and they did the same thing this weekend. They were, you know, they found surfers on the beach. They sent the local police down, and they gave them $1,000 tickets for being in the ocean, and which is where they ought to be if they want to avoid COVID. They want to get the sun and the vitamin D. They ought to be down there. But anyway, you know, the government decided we're not going to allow people there, so they gave them $1,000 tickets. Well, what if we lived in a world where there were biometric facial recognition stations everywhere, where Bill Gates is following what you do on your Apple Watch and on your car GPS, on your phone GPS, and they're looking at everything. What he says is his company is going to be able to look at every square inch of the Earth, the satellites that he's launched. So what if they already know that you've been? They don't have to send police down to the beach. They know that you were in the water. And now they don't have to give you a ticket. They can just extract the fine from your payroll account in digital currency. It gives them total control over you. And, you know, right now we're watching Facebook and all these other companies punish us if we don't, you know, if we say the wrong thing. What if they can take your money away? What if they can shut you down completely if you don't obey? That's what digital currency will let them do. And they're, of course, they're going to use the pretense that paper currency is carrying the COVID virus. We have to get rid of it as a, you know, biosecurity concern. And it's all part of this effort to drive biosecurity into the leading factor in all foreign and domestic policy. And that biosecurity excuse gives them a chance to impose conditions on human beings that no government, no tyranny, not the worst tyranny in history, not Mao Zedong, not Pol Pot, not Joseph Stalin, not Adolf Hitler, did not have the power that these people now have to tell you, you know, to tell everybody in our country, you have to stay in your house, you have to wear a mask, you can't go to the beach, you can't hike in the woods, you can't get close to your girlfriend, you know, you can't hold somebody's hand, you can't send your children to school. We're going to treat little chick kids like they're, you know, they're biohazards, and we're going to teach them that they're like their fellow students are biohazards. And, you know, we have a government telling us to do all these things. And, you know, I don't object to the government telling me to do it if they should tell me what the rationale is. But they've lied to us from day one about this virus. First of all, the estimates of, you know, of how many people it's going to kill. They said 2 million in this country. And we now know those were completely fraudulent, never peer-reviewed estimates that were created by Bill Gates and his lackey, Neil Ferguson, a guy who is, you know, this biostatistician who is notorious in every pandemic from hoof and mouth disease to, you know, to COVID, of exaggerating, of just lying. And so they told us that, and that prompted the lockdown. And then all of the testing kits, where they're, you know, the way that they're reporting the disease, the way that they're testing for it, where CDC, we now know, has never distinguished between the antibody test and the test that tests whether you have an active virus. We have not, no idea when they say all these people in Texas and all these people in Florida are all infected, and everybody goes, holy cow, it's galloping across the country. But we don't know whether those are old antibodies, maybe from a cold, a common cold that they got 10 years ago. And nobody's reporting what the deaths are. And that is really the only relevant metric. Now, I look at CNN every day. I'm sick to my stomach because they won't tell me. Where are we on the death curve? That's the only curve that counts. And they're telling us all of the, you know, they're deliberately trying to frighten us all the time rather than trying to have what we need to have now. They're gaining all of these numbers. And you have to be stupid to not see that they're doing that, or completely naive. And, you know, I'm ready to do whatever I need to do for my country, for my community, to protect people. But I do not want to be ordered to do things that don't make any sense to me, that are not the product of policies that come from open debate, civil debate, and respectful debate that is based on empirical, scientifically based facts. I do not want to be motivated by fear. I will not let somebody scare me into doing something. And I think most people, most Americans, you know, I think feel that way. They don't want to be frightened. Well, anyway, a lot of us do.
Yeah.
We don't, you know, it's not that we don't want to do things that are going to help our community and other people. We just see that this whole thing is being gamed. And that, you know, the public health officials have been lying for years. And, you know, I remember I was reading recently, Polly, about John Anthony Morris. John Anthony Morris was one of the greatest bacteriologists in history. He worked for 32 years. He was the chief bacteriologist at NIH. And he was the guy who was in charge in the early 70s in developing a flu vaccine. He helped develop the flu vaccine. And he said, you know what? We actually are testing this vaccine. And one, it's loaded with extraneous bacteria. Number two, it doesn't prevent the flu. Number three, it's causing really bad neurological outcomes in people. And it's fraudulent. And, you know, when I said he developed it, the companies developed the flu vaccine, but then they had to go through NIH's process. And he was the guy who was in charge of monitoring those protocols and the compliance, the testing compliance with those protocols. He told his bosses at NIH that this is a fraudulent vaccine. It doesn't work. It kills people, it causes brain damage, and actually, it may actually cause people to get the flu or make it more likely that they get the flu, do something to their immune system where they're more likely to get the flu. He was told to shut up, and his bosses went to Congress, and there was a swine flu epidemic in 1976 at the end of Fort Dix. One soldier died. And they said, this is the beginning of a swine flu pandemic. It never materialized. And they said, this is the beginning, and it's going to kill more people than the Spanish flu. 50 million people, you know, 140 million people today could die from this disease. They went to President Gerald Ford. They got $135 million in, which was a huge amount of money back then, to create 140 million flu shots to give to 140 million Americans. And they ended up giving it to 45. They fired John Anthony Morris. He would not keep his mouth shut. They locked his lab. They stole all of his, you know, all of his notebooks. And they fired him for returning library books late. That was the excuse that they needed to drum up, because this guy was such a good employee that he'd never done anything else wrong in 32 years. And We ultimately sued them. He was completely exonerated by the court, and he was restored. But what he said is, you know, in 1988, he gave an interview to the New York, 87, he gave an interview to the New York Times, and he said, you know, in the 11 years since this happened, they've been selling this flu vaccine to the American public, and they've done nothing to improve it, and it's fraudulent. And during that pandemic, they gave, I think, 500 people got Guillain-Barré syndrome. The flu, the rate of swine flu in people who got the shot was 7 times the rate of swine flu in people who did not. And there was all kinds of paralysis, death. I think by 87, the government had paid out $160 million to people who were injured by that vaccine. And in the end, they may have paid $1 billion. And he said, up to the day he died, it is getting, the flu shot is getting worse and worse. Flu shots do not work. They make people sick. They make it more likely you're going to get respiratory illness, which at that time they called all respiratory illness the flu. Oh, Cochrane Collaboration, which is the ultimate arbiter for vaccine safety, has now done 2 meta reviews of all of the literature that's ever been published on the flu shot. And they did it in 2010 and 2014. And then the BMJ, the British Medical Journal, Peter Doshi, the editor, did his own meta review, I think in 2017. And they all confirmed what John Anthony Morris said back in 1976, that the flu shot is a fraud, and that it, you need to give 100 flu shots at best to prevent one case of flu, and that there are no deaths prevented and no hospitalizations prevented, and that there are, and that if you get the flu shot, you're more likely to transmit the flu than people who didn't get it. Oh, you look at the history, and they continue to push this shot year after year. And how do they push it? They lie about the flu deaths. Oh, if you look at CDC's mortality and morbidity data, those data show, keep track of the actual flu deaths year by year. What you'll see is that on average, there's about 2,000 people who die from the flu every year in our country. But that's not what you hear from CNN or from CDC. What they've been telling you for years is that between 47,000 and 90,000 people die. They tell you that to convince you to go get that flu shot. There's only 2,000 people dying. And they... And I've written letters and, you know, and done everything I can to Sanjay Gupta, to Anderson Cooper, to all of the hosts of all of the news shows, and said, you cannot keep lying about this. What they're doing is they're taking the pneumonia deaths, which are between 45 and 85,000 a year, and they're conflating those with flu deaths. And it's not right, because only about 7% of people who die from pneumonia test positive for the flu. Oh, telling people those flu deaths, those pneumonia deaths are actually flu deaths is just a lie. Sanjay Gupta knows that he is lying. Anderson Cooper knows that he is lying, because I've written them and I've shown them the data. And yet they just lie year after year. So that's why I come up and I see them every day, you know, talking about how great Anthony Fauci is. Well, Anthony Fauci is the guy who's getting to lie about the flu deaths all those years. Oh, you know, the public health officials in this country have a big problem, and it's a credibility problem. And they're trying to blame, you know, the people who won't wear masks. Trying to say these are crazy Trump supporters who don't care about their neighbors because Trump told them it's cool not to care about your neighbors, but that's not what they're doing.
Correct.
These are people who are saying, I do not trust you, Tony Fauci, because you've been lying to us for 30 years. I don't trust you, Anderson Cooper. I don't trust you, Sanjay Gupta. And every time they show these ads on CNN about, oh, this is an apple, this is not a banana, to show that CNN is somehow telling the truth and Trump people are lying, you know, as far as I'm concerned, they're all lying. And, you know, they all get it about right about the same number of times. And CNN is systematically lying to protect the pharmaceutical paradigm that is promoted by its biggest advertisers. And it is reprehensible. And it is a huge tragedy for American democracy.
Well,
anyway, thank you, Polly.
Yeah, Bobby, just tell everybody where to go. They're asking what to do. I mean, everybody wants to know what to do. But at the moment, go to Children's Health Defense, because you're updating people. You've got an amazing team updating people on what is going on. It's like the best news you can get, factually checked by the best lawyers in this country, in my mind anyway.
We have a lot of lawyers working for us, but we also, Lynn Redwood, who is a nurse practitioner who runs our organization, who is, you know, the person who really discovered the link between mercury vaccines and autism. Her own son got autism from a mercury vaccine. She was a public, she's a nurse practitioner, a public health official in Georgia, and she gave tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, of vaccines to people, believing completely in them, before she discovered, just by serendipity, what had happened to her son. And she was, she is on, you know, she runs the staff, but we have doctors who work for us, we have medical people, all kinds of professionals. And what we try to do is to be very precise in the information that we give people. We try to weaponize information. We read the studies as they come out. We turn them into forms that are accessible, where people understand what the study means, what the weaknesses, what the strengths, and how it fits into the puzzle. So that when you go to your legislature, when you go to your neighbor, when you go to your friend or your pediatrician, we are going to give you information that you can trust and that you can use. And that's really what the core mission that we do is. In addition to that, at Children's Health Defense, we are turning that information into litigation. You know, it's very hard to figure out how to sue a vaccine company, but we figured out how to do it. You cannot sue a vaccine company for injuring your child, no matter how badly, egregious the injury, grievous the injury is, no matter how toxic the ingredient, no matter how negligent that company behaved. You cannot sue them for injuring your child, but you can sue them for fraud. We figured out how to do that. And we now have a battery of attorneys who are bringing those suits. We got a lot of suits in the pipeline. We need your support. We need your help.
Yes.
We're suing on 5G. We're suing on glyphosate. We're suing on all of these toxic assaults on our children. And we don't care. We are not Republican. We're not Democrat. I don't even know how the people on this staff vote. I know a lot of them are from the right. A lot of them are from the left. But we work together. We found common ground. The things that hold us together are good science, precise science, robust science, our passion to end the corruption in the public health services, and our passion for empiricism, for empirical science, and for communicating that, and for, above all, fighting for our children. There is no such thing as a Republican child or a Democratic child.
Exactly.
These children are entitled to protection, and we don't care what you are. We want you part of this movement. We don't care what your ideology is, your race, creed, color. You can be communist, you can be fascist. We don't care. If you want to protect children, we want you on our side. So come to my Instagram, come to Children's Health Defense, and join the army.
And when's your big debate? What's the date of your debate?
Oh, the 23rd. I'm going to be debating Alan Dershowitz on the 23rd. For most of you, they know Alan Dershowitz, who was Jeffrey Epstein's lawyer. He's Donald Trump's lawyer. He was OJ's lawyer. He's been, one of the premier legal thinkers in this country for 30 years or 40 years. He's a Harvard professor. And he went on Tucker Carlson about, I think, 2 or 3 weeks ago and made a very strident statement that the government has a right to come into your house, to kick your door down, and to jam, plunge, he said, a COVID vaccine into your arm against your will, whether you want it or not. And he said, that's what the law says in this country. And he said, if they develop a vaccine and they want to do it, I want to represent the case. I want to be the one who argues that case in front of the Supreme Court. I will win that case. That's what he said. So I asked him whether I've known him for many years. I said, will you debate me on that issue? And he said, sure, I will. He went on Del's show recently, and I think Del did a wonderful job of talking him through some of the issues. And I've talked to him a lot since then by phone. And I think he's probably already a lot less strident than he was at that point. But anyway, the big debate is on the 23rd. It's a big thing for me because for the last 15 years, I've been trying to find somebody to debate me. Paul Offit won't debate me. Peter Hotez won't debate me. Francis Collins won't debate me. Tony Fauci won't debate me. Peter Marks won't debate me. Nobody will debate me. The head of Kaiser Hospital went and debated me. And when he lost the debate, he got the TV show, which is here in Los Angeles, to not show it. I went to debate 5 scientists, urologists from Yale, at the request of the Connecticut State Legislature 5 months ago, flew across the country on the red eye. And, you know, they had staked it against me. They said, everybody gets 8 minutes. You get 8 minutes and they get 40 minutes. I said, that's okay with me. All I need is 8 minutes. And but when I got there, there was me and 5 empty chairs. Oh, as soon as somebody agrees to debate me, they get calls from Paul Offit, Peter Hotez, and all of the big shots say, do not debate him. So I'm very grateful to Alan Dershowitz for giving us this opportunity to actually have a civil conversation in front of the American people about an issue of extreme public import. And I urge you all to watch that debate when we have it.
And you'll put it out. It's not going to be live, is it?
We don't know. We don't know yet because it's on Infotainment, which is on David Bet Abraham's show. I was on that show before it has a huge viewership. And I think what he's going to let us do, I think he's going to air it and let us air it simultaneously on Instagram and Facebook. But I don't know yet. But we will announce, if you follow me on Instagram, I will tell you where and when to watch the debate.
Fantastic. Bobby, thank you so much.
Thank you, Polly. Really good to talk to you.
Okay, speak soon. Turn it off.